Hi there, my name is Kelly Cody Grimm.
And I'm Max Grimm.
And we are Creative Actors Lab. What we want to do is just talk a little bit about how you can bring creativity into your everyday life. Hey everybody, it's Kelly.
And Max.
And we are back for another podcast. This one is number 15. And would you like to state what the theme of it is?
Well, yes, I would. Basically, it's brevity is the soul of wit. A quote of Shakespeare, it comes from the play Hamlet, Act 2, Scene 2, if you want to get particular about it. And just as a side note, just so many of the students we've had over the course of time, when I start to bring up Shakespeare, people get either very intimidated, or they think it's weird, or they think it's, you know, just foreign or outdated or whatever. And it's really not. So if you, this is something, actors, if you wish to know more about Shakespeare, check out nosweatshakespeare.com, and it explains the language and what it actually means. And it basically says this: brevity is the soul of wit, which means that one can say a lot more by using a minimum of language to convey something. In other words, being brief is the essence of intelligence. Again, this is off nosweatshakespeare.com. And Polonius, the irony of this is Polonius in the play Hamlet tends to yak a lot. So basically he says Claudius and Gertrude, the king and queen, says, "My liege and madam, to expostulate what majesty should be, what duty is, what day is day, night, night, and time is time, were nothing but to waste night, day, and time. Therefore, since brevity is the soul of wit, and tediousness the limbs and outward flourishes, I will be brief. Your noble son is mad."
And often, people who are creative, sometimes them getting started, it is not so much, I don't have any ideas, I can't think of anything. It's, I have got so many ideas that are hitting me all at once. I don't know which one to start. And then you get afraid of picking the wrong idea, or you're trying to do too much at once, and then you end up either procrastinating or you're not finishing projects. So we kind of want to talk about that, just as creative people, and this is a struggle we faced as well.
I remember years ago seeing a documentary about Mick Jagger and what his creative process was, and basically he keeps a notebook with him all the time and writes down absolutely everything. And I remember him saying, it's like, you know, this is where you want to be when you're getting ready to go play a part or write an album or any of that. You know, just having all of these ideas is really the position you want to be in. It's better to go in with too much information and too many ideas than not enough. Now, the difficulty in this becomes, what ideas do you use? What do you focus on, and what do you either put off for another project or something like that? You know, it's just like, and it comes down to, you really have got to focus upon one really good idea, and the other ideas that you have that are meant to go with that idea will naturally find their way into it. But having this focus, having this kind of like one-pointedness on one idea and really expounding upon that is really what you need to do creatively, because people can have 10 million ideas and they're trying to pack them all into one project, be it a script or an album or a movie or a recipe. The old saying, too many cooks spoil the soup, applies here as well. And there's a couple of things I'll say. The band, I remember hearing an explanation about the heavy metal band Tool, that basically they've got to sound like no one else. Their fan base is ravenously loyal. Part of the reason for that, or at least this is what they would surmise, is that the way Tool writes is they start out with basically what they call the seed of a song. And they take just that very simple little musical phrase and then play it over and over and then turn it on its head and turn it upside down and turn it backwards and variate upon that one single musical idea for the length of a song. And if you have ever listened to the band, their stuff is like 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes long. But it's all based on one small concept, one small riff, or one small melody. It's sort of like the snowballing effect. You know, the snowball starts off going down the hill, and then as it goes, it collects more and more and more, and by the time it rolls down to the end of the hill, it's huge. It's the same idea. And, you know, Tennessee Williams, once said, probably the hardest part of writing is, in quotes, letting go of your little darlings, in that there's all of these ideas that you have and you're trying to pack them all in, but frankly, they just either don't fit or it's too much or too many ideas are sort of clouding the main idea, the main concept, or the main story that you're trying to tell. And there's sometimes, and well, not sometimes, it's most of the time, particularly with writers, that you just really need to take all these other ideas that you're trying to find a place in the story for them, and you're trying to make them all fit, but they just don't. If it's a good idea, it will find its way into the light on its own steam. Not because you're trying to force it all in or just trying to, you know, force too much stuff. It's like trying to put 10 pounds of stuff in a 5-pound sack. It doesn't work. So there just come times where you really have got to self-edit. As much as you may love some of these creative ideas that you have and you want to share with the world, you can really only focus on one thing at a time. As artists, we love to create. We love to get all of that stuff in our heart and soul and open up our chest and just throw it all on the table and go, here you go. If it's too many ideas, they're going to be fighting for attention. To speak briefly about meditation, which, by the way, I think is so important for creative people to do. But if you look at the past and the future, and the present moment, it's the shape is sort of like an hourglass. And you have this big pool of stuff from the past, and then you have this big pool of dreams and hopes and fears for the future. But what you can only be in the present moment if you look at the shape of an hourglass is the little opening that lets the sand pass from the top glass to the bottom glass. And it's sort of, if you look at it that way, you can only fit just so much into that present moment. All of the hopes and dreams for the future and all of the history, it's just going to get blocked. And you have to be mindful of the fact there is just that one small little opening that is the present moment that you have with yourself as an artist and with your audience in whatever form or fashion they take. And just focusing upon, as best as you can, the simple idea, the simple concept. That simplicity can have the greatest amount of profundity to it. You know, and another guy, and I've mentioned him a few times in this, but David Lynch, the film director, made Blue Velvet and Elephant Man and Wild at Heart and all of these great films. He basically said, everything starts with an idea. If you don't have an idea, you got nothing. Every single thing that man has ever created started with an idea. And then they got it out into the world. Once you get the idea out of your head and into the world, it's like, how do you nurture it? How do you allow it to grow and gestate and flourish and become its best self? You know, and so you don't have to pack 10,000 things out. You don't have to put 10,000 ingredients into your soup to make it a delicious soup. Sometimes some of the most delicious foods are the most simple. They have 3, 4, 5 ingredients. Some of the best stories are the simplest. My favorite book, I think ever, was Jonathan Livingston Seagull. And it's just, and it's such a simple story. I mean, you could tell this to children. You could tell it to 90-year-olds, 100-year-olds. They would all get it. It's because it's just focusing upon the simplicity of this bird who loves to fly. And that's it. And then any other idea that comes into it, it's because it's sort of just naturally found its way into it, not because it was being forced. Sometimes just the simplest brushstroke on a painting is the most profound. Sometimes the simplest group of words in a poem can move the hearts and minds of millions.
Again, the simplicity is what's really amazing. And, you know, I've talked about my background being with improvisation. And, you know, you will see that with beginning improvisers. Is so often they'll start a scene and then all of a sudden there's a cast of thousands that they're bringing on because this is what they're thinking of and this is what they really want to do. And to try to get them to focus and try to just keep it in one simple package can really be challenging because, yes, they have all those great ideas, but maybe it's not all going to happen in one improv sketch. You know, I always tell my students, look, you're going to probably have 100 billion ideas in your lifetime. Not all of them have to come to fruition at one time. And sometimes, and you know, when you were talking about cutting down in the critique groups, when I started doing that, I had not heard that. But, you know, when you have to edit, and sometimes they'll talk about, you get so fixated on, this is what I want it to be. And then all of a sudden they'll say, well, you're making me cut my baby. Mm-hmm. And that mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, if you really become so entangled in one idea, the idea of having to shift it. And I was discussing with Max on our way here, and by the way, big shout out to Gwinnett County Libraries once again.
Thank you, Gwinnett County Libraries.
Thank you for letting us use your facilities. But as we were coming here, I was saying, you know, when I went to write my first novel, and it was off of my Ghost Wanderers characters, and I really wanted to explore Sophia's relationship with her husband and her background in her childhood. And so that was going to set up the first book. And then the second book was going to be her getting the powers and finding all these other ghosts. And then the third book was going to be the shape-shifting serial killer that she was going to have to try to hunt down. What I found was, okay, I've outlined out this novel, but the third novel was the one that really excited me. And I had, you know, started, I was maybe about 40 pages into the first one, and I went, you know what, why don't I take part of this, make this a short story? I really want to start with the third novel. And then once I did that, and then once I had a critique group where I had to be responsible for submitting each time anywhere from 10 to 20 pages, it made me write a lot faster. And then I knew that I wanted to pitch to the Atlanta Writers Conference, and I signed up for some agents, even though it was a first draft. And what that did was say, I have got a hard deadline of the end of October. So when I go to this particular conference, I knew that I had a product that I could pitch. Now, of course, I didn't realize that your first draft is going to not be your last draft, and you are going to make changes. And then when I was submitting again to the critique group, I found that their eyes were really good, and I got some good edits. But what I didn't do was become so enamored of my idea that I was not able to change and make the shifts that I needed to. And that was really very instructive, both as somebody who's a writer with novels and then also screenplays. And what I've learned is sometimes, yeah, you have all these ideas, but the simplest way, and what I tell my students when they're doing screenwriting, is don't, you know, definitely get a beat sheet, like the Save the Cat beat sheet. Look at outlining things out, but even that sometimes can be very intimidating. My suggestion is start with one scene, start with one monologue. Just write a couple of pages at first and see where that takes you. And ultimately, when you take all that pressure off yourself and all those ideas, and we're going simple this, simple that, you are going to be able to get to the beginning and the end. But it's when you're putting all this pressure on yourself to try to develop all these ideas all at once, that's where things really, really get muddled. And the truth of the matter is even, again, like with me, even after I finished my first novel, it's probably in its fifth draft. I probably do at least 3 or 4 drafts of any scripts that I do. And then that's the fun part. I think most writers will tell you the scariest thing is sitting down to a blank page.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, probably painters, same thing too. Scariest things, sitting
canvas.
The blank canvas. So the minute that you can finish it and then go back and finesse it, then you're like, oh, okay. But you just got to get it out there. And it's going to be word vomit. It's going to be a sloppy, gloppy sculpture. And then as you start to refine it, it gets better and better. But that's what I tell people. Don't make perfection. I was teaching a slate class the other day, and I, you know, what I told them is, this is not a finished product. You all have time to finesse this before you're filming for your demo reels. So don't put that pressure on yourself, but these are just seeds to have you be thinking of things. And, you know, once I took that pressure off of them and said, hey, they were able to create, they were staying within time, they had some good ideas. Again, I gave them some coaching on things that, you know, make your best for first, don't save your best for last, particularly on slates, because that's how you introduce yourself to an agent. So if you're going on a, you know, about your family and your favorite recipe, and then at the end you're going, oh, by the way, I actually did this movie with Robert De Niro and that's how I got my SAG card. Yeah, that one goes first. You have those ideas. They're amazing. Just look at the structure and then give yourself many deadlines to get it done. But again, creative people, we have so many ideas coming at us at once that it can be daunting. And I honestly think people who procrastinate, they're not lazy. They're just intimidated by their imagination and wondering, how am I going to get all this done? So it's just kind of breaking it down into little bite-sized pieces. That's going to get you where you need to go.
Actually, I have a few things to say here. But one thing I've noticed about you in the, you know, because this coming October, it is, you and I will be together as a couple for 36 years, married for 31. But that is what I've noticed about you. That is kind of your process. It's your method. But, you know, in that you, it seems like you will intentionally put yourself into a position where there's like, I have a finite amount of time to get something done. That is not my personal approach to things, but that's okay. It's you know, we all have our own process. We all have our own method. And that's kind of, I'll just, to digress for a moment, there's so much about coaching people in acting, and they start talking about method acting and all that sort of a thing. And quite frankly, most of them really don't know what it is. But kind of like my personal approach and my wish and my intention when I start, you know, coaching people acting is that you find your method. You'll read from these different acting coaches and teachers, and Stanislavski and Uta Hagen and Viola Spolin and all these people, and you sort of pick and choose the different parts of what works for you personally and what doesn't, and everyone's going to be different. I have noticed this about you for the longest time, is that whenever you have something to do, be it a creative project or not, it's like, I have X amount of time to get it done. And by God, you get it done. Sometimes it scares me a bit, but you know, at this point, 36 years, it works for you. It works for you. It's how you work. It's how you process. It's how you get stuff done. It works for you. I think, to be honest with you, creative people in general, it's kind of like, if you have all the time in the world to work on a project, that's not always the best thing. You've got 30 days. You've got 2 weeks. I remember being involved in a stage production that was going on tour, and I remember one of the lead actors, which kind of, shall we say, flaked out on us, and they had to pull in a guy who had less than 24 hours to memorize this, and it was about a 35-40 minute play, and he had less than 24 hours to learn his lines and have chemistry with the rest of the cast and all this sort of a thing, and it was terrifying. We're going to get up in front of 300 people and look like a bunch of fools. It's that sense of urgency that got the product done. And that's another thing. It's an expression I find myself using quite a lot with when I'm coaching somebody or directing them in a scene. It's the sense of urgency. It's like, what's going to happen if your character doesn't get such and such done in such and such time frame? Why does your character just do this? Why did they just say or do whatever it is they just said or did to whatever other character? And what do you think the consequences are going to be? And anytime I hear the response of, oh, well, you know, really nothing. We're just having fun. It's like, okay, let me be straight out. That's wrong. When you're working with a character, whatever they're doing, there's got to be consequences. And that's got to be important. And you as the actor, you as the creator, you as the, you know, devising, building your character's machine, so to speak, there's no action, there's no phrase that is inconsequential. Everything has consequences. And if that is not there, if it's just, oh, my character's just goofing around, if you don't care enough to give your character's words and actions some kind of importance, the audience is not going to listen. And I wanted to say a couple of other things also in what you just said about, you know, coaching people in these slate classes. If you don't know what that is, it's just basically, it's like a 30 to 40 second video of yourself going, hi, my name is Max Grimm. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. You know, I've been an actor for 1,000 years at this point, you know, and I like yoga and hiking and cooking and so on and so forth. Hope you enjoy my demo reel. Anyway, we were coaching. This was some time ago, and I've actually just gotten to a point about this story where I can actually tell it and not cry. We had a young lady in the class. She was 8 years old. And she gets up and she goes to do her first time through. And she says, you know, hi, my name is, and, you know, I like pizza and I dance ballet and blah, blah, blah. And then she just kind of offhandedly throws out this, oh, and I got my daddy a kidney and I hope you enjoy my demo reel. And we're kind of like, whoa, back up. Whoa, 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 whoa. Basically, this young girl at 4 years old, her father was having a really bad health crisis and he needed a kidney transplant. I know some of you who are listening to this have heard me tell this before, but basically at 4 years old, somehow or other got it into her that she was going to make a video and enlist the help of the people around her, the family and friends around her. They made a video to where she said, my daddy needs a kidney transplant. Can someone please help? And lo and behold, it went viral. It got on the local news. And she, lo and behold, got her father a kidney and saved his life. And the way she put it was just kind of like, oh, yeah, by the way, whatever. And we're like, honey, darling, sweetheart, do you realize what you don't realize what you've done there? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like just one of those little, tiny little events like that that you can share with somebody. That simple thing right there, well placed within your presentation, you can move people to tears. You can mm-hmm. open people's hearts with that. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's an extreme example, but we've all got instances like that in our lives that when we go to share in a creative fashion, we just don't give that stuff enough credit. And it can be stated and demonstrated so simply. A couple of other things I just wanted to mention also. I remember just also to amplify what you were just talking about. An old friend of ours, very, very wise person, once said to me, is like, do not pursue perfection. Mm-hmm. The pursuit of perfection will only lead you to frustration. And rather than perfection, pursue mastery. Pursue excellence. Mm-hmm. Because you are, just as human beings, you can sustain and reproduce excellence and mastery far and away more than you're going to produce perfection. And that pursuit of excellence, that pursuit of mastery, that's what makes you feel good. That's what gets the dopamine flowing. Whereas if everything has got to be perfect, we're human beings. Time is fluid. Sometimes perfection exists in the mastery. Navajo Indians are expert in weaving tapestries. They could conceivably do a perfectly woven tapestry, but they don't. They intentionally put threads with errors in them. The reason being, they have to show that they're human beings and that they are just as just as capable as everyone else of not having every single little stitch in a row. And I realize I'm going all over the place with this, but you just said some things and it's making me think. I remember back in college, one of the I think it was the first play I ever was in on the main stage. Anyway, the run was over, and we all of us students had to get together and do set strike. And if you've never done that, that's basically tearing down the old set. The play's over, and here the flats come down, and the lighting gets unhung. And I'll never forget walking out of the theater, and it was just me and one other student who had been there for a while. We're walking through the audience, getting ready to walk out the door, and the theater's dark, and they have just this one work light up in the middle of the stage, and the whole rest, and it's just basically, if you've never seen this, it's just a bare light bulb on a lighting stand, and it's sitting in the middle of the stage, and everything else is dark. And I just remember walking out of there, and the guy turns around and looks, and he's like, look at that empty stage. Look at all that potential. Mm-hmm. Just imagine everything that could possibly go on that stage. It's just, you know, it's bare. It's just the black curtains and one light bulb, and that's all it is. Imagine everything that could possibly happen on there. It's awe-inspiring.
When you are doing improv, a lot of times people just want to limit themselves to the here and now. But keeping in mind, you have got a bare stage, mm-hmm. usually 4-5 folding chairs, and then mm-hmm. one person with a clipboard. And then everybody else has everything else. So you can be a swashbuckler. You can go back to Shakespearean times. You can go to the moon. You can do mm-hmm. all that stuff. Anywhere that your imagination wants to take you, you are able to go there. And, you know, again, so it's being able, and I think improv particularly, and we had talked about this, is when you first start doing things, you feel like you have this false sense of mastery because you're just starting out and you're a lot of ideas and concepts are coming to you and things are making sense. And then the more you dive into what that study is, then all of a sudden you realize you're not as smart as you think you are. You don't really have it all together. And I was saying this to the classes, like if you can get through that phase of doubt, and if you can get, and that's where a lot of people quit acting. It's like, oh, you know, I just stink and there's no way I'm going to get better. And then once you get through that phase, and then you realize, hey, I don't know as much as I think I do, but I can learn from all these other people and I'm just going to be a sponge. Then the magic happens. It's kind of like the magic happens in the beginning. Then you realize you don't know as much as you do because you're instinctive in the beginning. Then you're learning the technique. The technique feels like it's slowing you down. And then once you get past the technique, you kind of get back to that wonderful part of the instinct and the technique working together. If you let yourself get that far. You know, again, a lot of people just go, oh, it's just not happening for me. And any number, I mean, there's so many podcasts right now by different actors. And, you know, I love listening to The Office Ladies. And, you know, any number, Brian Baumgartner has a good one, Parks and Recollections. And so many of the actors on there will sit there and go, oh, it was just taking me. I just didn't think it was going to happen. And then one day, light bulb went off, and I realized this is what I needed to do. And again, pruning that tree where you don't start with a huge oak tree. The huge oak tree didn't come into the world as a huge oak tree. It came in as a seed and it got dirty. And then the roots started to go out. And then it came up through and then it became a sapling. And then the sapling started to flower the leaves. And then the leaves and the trunk got bigger and it got out there. But if you're thinking you're going to go from seed to giant oak tree, in a very short period of time.
2.5 seconds.
Exactly. That's not going to happen. So, you know, be your oak tree, but realize that it takes time. You know, and again, my daughter was having a bad day, and there is a guy on Instagram, Pop Bruce Johnson. And he just, I love his little inspirationals because, and of course, I love being called grandbaby. So it's like, hold up, grandbaby. And he's so inspiring because I think he knows I only have the audience for a short period of time. I have got to make this really simple, and I've got to tell these young people that whatever struggles they're having, they are who they are, and you can move on this, and I'm going to give you the confidence. I'm going to let you know that you're being seen and heard, even though I'm giving you tea via my phone and just recording these. But what I love about his messages is they're simple. And he what he does is he might do one every day or every other day, but he knows this is my simple message that I've got to get across in like a minute. And that, to me, you know, again, if you're a performer, if you're a business person, anybody that's out, you know, if you're working retail and sometimes you can only get a point across to a customer, you've just got to keep it simple. That is not the time to talk about everything you've got in inventory. What is it they want? What's the one simple thing that you can satisfy for them? And, you know, when we just give ourselves a break and going, you don't have to be everything, everywhere, all at once, although that was a brilliant movie. And just say, I am here now. This is my one focus. This is the one story I need to tell. This is the one little building block. This is my monologue building block. This is my two-person scene building block. This is my A and B. Where is my status? But if you're looking at all those different aspects to put together in a scene or a presentation or whatever, you are going to get overwhelmed. So just take that one little bit. When I am coaching people on presentations, rather than telling them to do bullet points, I'm like, put a picture in your PowerPoint presentation. Tell the story about that picture and keep it simple and specific.
You know, actually, now that you mention all of that, I just hit 60 years old this past year. I've seen a lot of things come on, you know, and I mean, I remember a time where there was no internet at all.
What?
And one thing I have noticed, particularly among younger people, and I don't mean to be disrespectful or belittling or anything like that, but if I'm going to be completely honest, I have noticed, and I think the internet has got a fair amount to do with this, people's attention spans are shrinking. I work with a lot of young people, and I'll just think to myself, can you focus for longer than 30 seconds? Is it possible? Well, you know, everything is now, it's being done in memes, reels, and things like this. And so I think that's something that's just a reality. We as people trying to communicate ideas and concepts with other human beings, whatever your medium is, whether you're an actor or whatever you are, you really do have to keep in mind that people's attention spans are shrinking and you need to get to the point. It's very difficult to keep people's attention just because that's how we're being trained and conditioned by this technology. And I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. It just is what it is. It's a reality you do have to contend with. One exercise we do, and we've done this with, like, when we're, like, you know, training salespeople in their presentations, but it really applies to really anybody, is the thing called the elevator pitch. And this is like a sales training thing. But it's just, you know, just imagine that you've got some product or service or some grand idea or something like that, and you're looking for somebody, some kind of investor or somebody, some kind of angel or venture capitalist to come in and basically give you the means to manifest this beautiful idea that you have. And so you're on an elevator, in walks somebody like Warren Buffett or Bill Gates or well-moneyed, well-connected people, and they just happen to walk in on the elevator that you're on, and they get on the third floor, and then they're going to get off on the 15th floor. And in that period of time, in that short, finite period of time, you've got to basically pitch them your idea in that very short period of time, and because this will make your dreams come true. This will change your life for the better. And you're given this moment to grasp it and fill it with the most precise, concise, heartfelt, intelligent, lucid information about whatever it is your product or service is. And you got to hook them in that short amount of time. You don't have them over like a four-course dinner. You know, you're not going to take a hike with them, you know, going in the mountains for hours on end. You've got 45 seconds. Go. Whatever the words to the Eminem song are, it's like, you know, if the moment came along, what would you do? Would you grasp it and, you know, give it everything you possibly could, or would you let it go by?
All right, even beyond the elevator pitch, if you are getting up, even in front of a room of people and introducing yourself, a lot of business networking groups, you've got your 45 seconds to explain who you are, what you do, and then just thank you. You know, Kelly Cody Grimm, Creative Actors Lab. And it really does cause you to focus. And again, you will see the people that are just doing this and they don't get the idea of the 45 seconds and they want to go on and on. And you'll be very nice and you're like, okay. But, you know, about a minute, 15 seconds, they've run over and you're having to go, grr. You know, that's another good example of brevity being the soul of wit. If you know what point, and you don't always have to do, again, if you're working with a group, you don't always have to do the same pitch each time, but have your point. So if you're going back week after week, and again, whether it's an acting networking, whether it's business networking, whether it's just getting up in a staff meeting and saying, this is what I want to accomplish for this week, just make sure that you have something easy and obtainable that you're able to tell that group all about. And what I have found over time is that can be the most effective thing. Did you find it?
Okay. The song is called Lose Yourself. I'm sorry. The old man here is blanking out on the rap song. But the intro is, look, if you had one shot or one opportunity to seize everything you ever wanted, one moment, would you capture it or would you just let it slip? You know, and life is short. Whether you choose to be an actor or whether you choose wherever your life takes you, you have to keep in mind that someday you're not going to be here anymore. This is a very stoic sort of thing to say, but we only have just so much time, whereas you certainly don't want to let things slip away. You want to make the most of everything that you're given for whatever amount of time that you're here. Sometimes saying one thing or doing one thing really well and really from your heart, it was where your heart and your brain got together and really put out one very lovely, lucid comment, or one simple, elegant thing in the world, better to do that than trying to pack it in with 10,000 other ideas that really don't enhance or amplify what it is that you're trying to get out of your soul and into the world and share with other people. Because one of the points of all of this, of all this creativity, is when you have the courage to just open up creatively and be who you are and do what you do and have it come from that place within you, the point of it is other people out there, some of which you probably have never met before, are going to, it's going to resonate with them. And in that moment, people come to realize they're not alone. So whatever you say, whatever you do, keep it simple. And because there's such fullness in that simplicity.
You know, building on that, what I would like to do is, you know, we'll just talk about creative prompts right now, mm-hmm. is just do something simple for yourself creatively. So whether it is just writing that character monologue and just doing that, doing just a two-person, two- or three-page scene, that is absolutely manageable. Trying to cook something with only four ingredients, mm-hmm. and making the very best and most beautiful food that you can do out of that. Sketching and only using the paper and maybe a pencil and some charcoal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anything like that, there's just so much out there that you can create, but just by keeping it simple and keeping it focused will just help you. And then, interestingly enough, when you are able to kind of overcome that procrastination or that intimidation about, I've got so many ideas, I don't know where to start, once you start, everything else is going to flow to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. But you've got to give yourself that permission and that chance to just start, just kick off that one little thing, stay focused, keep it brief, keep it witty, just, you know, within whether it's writing or whatever, but give yourself that opportunity. And when you do that, you're going to kind of step away and go, wow, I need to do this for myself more often, and definitely do that. And give yourself those goals to be able to achieve what you need to achieve. Do you want to chime in?
Okay, so the way my brain is working at the moment, just I think to finish it up, there was a show on the Food Network some time ago. It was called Semi-Homemade, and it was, the show was, it was what it was, and it appealed to a certain demographic, and it served its purpose in that way, but there was a lot of us who worked in the food service industry for a long time that found it rather humorous.
Could we say bless your heart?
Yeah, well, but I just remember, and I think maybe the way to finish off here is I remember the hostess of the show, she would finish off with this tagline of keep it sweet, keep it simple, and always keep it semi-homemade. Bye-bye.
You know what, though? There is some wisdom in that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, just keep it sweet and keep it simple, and don't put the pressure on yourself that you have to do everything all at once. And, you know, again, when you simplify it for yourself, all of a sudden you're going to find some of that stress really does come off, you know, rather than me trying to do a 3-book synopsis and everything. I just jumped to the one that I liked the most. And you know what? I ended up writing that one pretty fast because that was the one that really got me. But anyway, guys, thank you so much for joining us today. We really hope that this has been helpful. And remember, you can always find us on our website, creativeactorslab.com. Mm-hmm. We're on our social media pages as well. We've also got a Patreon if you'd like to support us that way. But again, just we enjoy doing this. We do hope that it's helpful.
Yeah.
And we do want you guys to be able to create and feel great about it.
You know, and just on a personal note, I will say I'm just starting to see that as far as this little endeavor we're doing here, I mean, people are actually listening. People are starting to download this thing. People are you know, taking notice of it. And it's, you know, kind of one of those things where it's sort of like planting a seed under concrete and then watering it every day. And then all of a sudden you start to see the little cracks in the concrete and a little sprout coming up. And then when you start to see that, it's incredibly gratifying. You know, thank you for listening. There's things that come out when we do this that I don't, I sort of have an idea, then something will be said, and it was just like, wait a minute, I need to talk about that. So sincerely, thank you guys for listening. Stay creative, be bold, and the gods will provide. All my love, guys.
Thanks so much, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye. We appreciate you guys tuning in, and keep in mind that you can catch us on our social media, Creative Actors Lab, on Instagram and Facebook, and by the same name on YouTube. And for more on what we do, you can go to our website,
creativeactorslab.com, all one word. Thank you for listening. Stay curious. Make art. Dr. Moore. Much love until next time.